And now, the Low Post.
Welcome to what is now the annual post-draft Friday. Oh my God, how many people and picks got traded? How many things am I going to screw up in the next Low Post podcast where I am thrilled to be joined by our draft guru, Jonathan Gavoni. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
You doing great?
I'm feeling awesome. Yeah, I'm ready to do this again. Let's go.
Bobby Marks, how are you?
I'm better when I operate better when I'm only on 2.5 hours sleep.
Bobby Marks was just telling me the story that he went back to his hotel at 2:30 in the morning after our copious draft coverage where about 400 second-round picks changed hands in an hour and then was updating cap sheets at 2:30 in the morning, which is both inspirational and quite sad, I think.
I do not want to do this on Saturday. Update Mike. I want to go home and see my kids for the first time in 2 weeks. And I don't want to update my cap sheets tomorrow.
This is actually going to be quite interesting. We now have 9 days before free agency, which is an unusually long time. Now, free agency has clearly already started. There's rumors of deals and opt-outs and this and that. But, like, I wonder how the next 9 days is going to be. It could be, knock on wood, a little bit quiet. Spoiler alert, it's not going to be quiet. And every time you think you're going to have a little afternoon with your kid, it's not going to happen. Okay, let's digest some of the crazy things that happened at the draft, which wasn't that crazy, but the sheer volume of stuff moving around got a little bit overwhelming. Let's start with the Pelicans because David Griffin turned number 4 into number 8, number 17, number 35. And off the top of my head, I don't even remember what the hell happened with number 35. I think they kept it and took someone I never heard of, right?
Didi Lozada.
That guy good?
He's solid. I mean, he's got a chance to be like a 3-and-D guy a couple years from now.
Okay. And they also got Cleveland's 2020 first, which I think is top 10 protected, was the old Kyle Korver first. So it will be 2 seconds because Cleveland is going to be terrible next year. And then barring some sort of crazy set of circumstances, that'll be 2 seconds. All of the draft Knicks say that is wonderful return for trading down what ended up being 4 spots. Is that about right? Like all the people who do that, like Pelton has his version of the Dallas Cowboys pick value chart. Like that seems like a lot to trade out at number 4. And Griff now has turned Anthony Davis into so many draft picks that I've lost track.
I mean, when you see which players win the second round and what the actual value was and, you know, all the craziness, I feel like if you like a player like Atlanta does, you make a strong move to go get that pick. I mean, it was obvious that DeAndre Hunter was their guy. And, you know, I'm a fan of aggressive moves. And so I think that it was a good trade for both sides.
Yeah, New Orleans just has a lot of stuff. Like, they really have a lot of stuff. And they got a couple of good prospects yesterday that people seem to like. So, Bobby, I have you here. How much cap space do the Lakers have question is now, like, it should appear on the LSAT next year. Like, I don't understand. Like, I've now lost track of where we are, whether this is a 3-team deal or even something greater, whether it's on schedule for a July 6th completion or a July 30th completion. Can you just, like, tell me how much cap space the Lakers are going to have?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on if a third team is added.
I'm already afraid. I'm already starting to get scared.
Right now, if the deal happened on July 6th, just between New Orleans and the Lakers, right? The two teams, what they agreed upon last Saturday, they would have $24 million in cap space, factoring in Anthony Davis not waiving his $4 million trade bonus. That will go up to 28. If he does waive that, the indication is that Davis will not waive that. If the Lakers can find that third team to take on Mo Wagner, Isaac Bonga, Jamario Jones, and ship those players to that team as part of a bigger trade, then they will have $32 million in cap space. You will shed those players there. This is not going to be an Atlanta, Brooklyn, Lakers. This is not going to be one of those big monster, like, five, because everything.
So the fact that number 4 already changed hands, yeah, and number 17 has now changed hands twice, yeah, that doesn't make this a 3-and-4 team trade already?
No, because what will happen is, Zach, is that you'll have, like, three separate trades here. So you'll have first the Atlanta-Brooklyn trade, right, the Taurean Prince, Allen Crabbe trade. So the rights to pick number 17, which is Nikhil Alexander-Walker, will now go to Atlanta. They will have control of that. Then they will do a second trade where it will be the Anthony Davis trade with the Los Angeles Lakers and the Pelicans here, where pick four will now be transferred, which is the rights to DeAndre Hunter will be sent to the Pelicans. Then they will do a third trade, which is between Atlanta and New Orleans, and what they agreed upon last night will all be conveyed. So it will be all three separate trades that they all have to time separately. Three conference calls with the league, but that's how the timeline is how it's going to have to be done.
So the answer is we still don't know how much cap space the Lakers, even setting aside, let's assume Davis doesn't waive his trade kicker. Let's just like take that variable out of it. So that leaves 27 or something like that, or does not 23.
Yeah, 24 if he does not waive
23,
it.
24, whatever it is. So we don't know if it's that or 32 or whatever. We still don't know.
Between 24 and 32. That's the number we should go by until there is a third team or there is not a third team here, which is exactly, as you know, that's a big gap. I mean, when you look at from free agency, that could be maybe three players, maybe two. It's an $8 million player right there.
And so the current thinking is that the Lakers understood all of this at the time of the trade. Now, I've lost track of who knew what and when. Again, this should be on the LSAT.
Yeah, I mean, just talking with people, you know, around the league in the last couple of days, the thinking is that the Lakers knew all along that July 30th was never really going to be in play because New Orleans was not going to be waiting around, and that that the goal for them after they couldn't wait because they didn't want to have this deal fall through. The goal for them was to find a third team to move these other players. Now it comes down to would New Orleans cooperate and make this deal even bigger here? I think that's the big question because it benefits the Lakers. You know, it gives them more cap space to get one player at $32 million or three players, at maybe at $10 million.
Jonathan, tell me about Jackson Hayes and this idea now that the Pelicans have he's a real, real center. Zion is a Zion. We'll see what a Zion is. Like, it's very early to talk about how all of these players fit together, but like, how do all those players fit together?
He's a project. It's gonna take him some time. I mean, this is a guy that didn't start in high school until his senior year. If you would have told anybody a year ago that he would be the eighth pick in the draft, people would have told you that you're insane. But just in terms of the physical tools, the size, the length, the mobility, there's a lot to work with. He was best center prospect in the draft. And, you know, it's just interesting to see where the centers go because not a great night to be a big man in the NBA, and we're seeing that trend more and more here. I think it's interesting. I think Zion Williamson is going to play a lot of center next year. That's what it looks like because Jackson Hayes, I mean, I don't know how competitive they're going to be, but he probably isn't ready to play more than 15, 20 minutes per game right now. But long term, there's a lot to work with.
How do you project? You've written a lot about Zion, obviously, for years and years. How do you how do you project his jump shot? How confident are you as an evaluator that there's an NBA jump shot in there?
Not that confident, but I'm not sure how much it matters if you use him the way I envision, which is as a Giannis type with the ball in his hands, your primary ball handler, surrounding him with shooters. It's going to take a while for New Orleans to get there because they don't have a lot of shooting on their roster right now. But I don't see a player in the NBA who can guard Zion Williamson at his peak. And so he's going to be really, really good.
Yeah, they don't have a lot of shooting. Like when I think of shooting, I don't think of Lonzo Ball, and I don't think of Brandon Ingram quite yet. Although he shot 39% from three two seasons ago. They do have $30 million in cap space, which is like when I redid my New Orleans cap number this morning. You know, they cleared Solomon Hill in this trade as well, which is something we should talk about. Which is a good win for them. They have $30 million. All of a sudden, they have almost max cap space, basically. There was a lot of noise. I can't remember who tweeted or what or whatever, but that Griff was looking for a veteran stretch big in talks for the fourth pick. I couldn't find a veteran stretch big who made any sense for the number four pick. I looked at every roster, and really quickly, I couldn't find anybody. now with $30 million in cap space, you got some options. I'm still trying to figure out who that would be.
Well, yeah, I mean, really the only veteran stretch big would be Kevin Love, right? I mean, that's a big number.
There was a lot of talk of Kevin Love possibly, you know, getting moved to New Orleans. I mean, obviously they're not done. I mean, their roster is going to look very, very different a month or two from now than it does today. And, you know, you're like you said, not a lot of shooting there. But they can afford to be patient. They're not going to be good next year. They are probably going to get another high draft pick. They've got so many assets. And so
Kevin Love is almost going to be more interesting to me than the Chris Paul thing, because everyone is trying to think about how make up Chris Paul trades. And there are not very many, if any, that make any sense. Kevin Love has sort of been forgotten about. And there's this idea that he's on an absolutely poisonous contract, which it's a big number. The number is 31. I'm sorry, it's 20. It's four more years left on it. 29, 31, 31, 29. You know, honestly, it's not 43 like Chris Paul's number is. It's not at the end of it. It's not. And he's Kevin. What's Kevin Love? 30? I don't have it. He's not old. You know, I think teams are going to. There's this arms race now with the Warriors having fallen apart due to injury. You saw Utah made a move to try and win now, and everyone's laughing at the idea that Utah can make the finals next year. Why? Why is that funny? Why is that a funny idea? They're a good team. Now they have a huge, giant hole at power forward that they need to address, and we can talk about maybe how you address that. I don't think Kevin Love is going to be the answer to that question. But, you know, Portland would be an obvious place to look at Kevin Love. But then you start thinking, you know, is Kevin Love a 5 or a 4 now in the NBA? And that's a question that will get you a lot of different answers from people around the league. And Portland's 5, of course, snapped his leg in half late in the season, and his timetable is sort of unclear about when he's going to come back. But the Kevin – so what was the – there was talk about Kevin Love being loosely involved in, like, number 4 trade talks, right? But and that was, like, Kevin Love possibly going to New Orleans?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was just tons of talk about Cleveland making a trade with New Orleans. I mean, everybody was trying to move up to that 4 slot, and, you know – some people thought that Kevin Love could be someone that Griff would target. Obviously, he knows him very well.
That feels like, even with all the nice things I just said about Kevin Love, that feels like the timetables are not set up correctly. I mean, there's all this noise about Dallas and Al Horford, and there's almost so much noise about Dallas and Al Horford that I'm starting to believe it's one of those game of telephone things that might end up being fake. And there's a 10-year age difference between Al Horford and the two core players on Dallas. That one I almost don't mind as much, because those two players are already so accomplished that I know what they look like in the NBA. I know what they can do. They're ready to perform in big games for good teams right now, provided Kristaps Porzingis is healthy. New Orleans guys are just, you know, Zion is a we'll see what he does. He's going to be a good rookie, but he's a rookie. Lonzo and Ingram, it almost feels like they need to kind of reboot. Let's figure out who we are in a new environment outside of the circus, outside of LeBron. It just feels like a little rush to throw a guy like Kevin Love in there. Let's talk about Atlanta. A year ago, Atlanta got absolutely destroyed. Not on this podcast, by the way. On the post-draft podcast I did last year, I said, you know, look, we're going to have to wait. I understand everyone loves Luka. Luka's the best prospect in the draft. Everyone loves him. I loved him. They traded down and got Trae Young and a future first that has now turned into Cam Reddish. Luka was way better than Trae Young last year. Even when Trae had a really nice last 40 games, even during that span, Luka was a significantly better player. But Trae had a really nice last 30 games. Reddish, I don't really know much about. He's got certainly the big name Duke stuff. How do you think, start with you, how do you think that trade is going to look in 5 years?
The Luka trade?
The Luka trade.
I mean, Trae Young has been really good. So, I mean, I think it's going to look good for both sides. I mean, they obviously invested in Trae, and they set up their whole team around him, and they're continuing to do that with Reddish and DeAndre Hunter. You know, unlike a lot of teams last night, you can see an outline of a plan for the Atlanta Hawks. They have a blueprint of what they want to do. And they have a style of play. They have a style of player that they like, and so I think it's, you know, they're putting Trae Young and the players that they draft in a position to be successful, which you know, a lot of the teams last night, you're like, just what the hell are they doing? I mean, what is the plan here?
Yeah, give me your what is the plan here teams, because we were talking a little bit about before the pod. Give me your what, because one of your what is the plan here teams surprised me on multiple levels.
Phoenix Suns?
No, that we're going to talk about in a second, because that's not a surprise. The Spurs is the one that surprised me.
Yeah, I mean, draft, you always associate international players with the Spurs, but I probably had 7 different international scouts reach out to me and say, did I just miss the boat on Luka Šamanić? Because international scouts did not like this kid. They were worried about his toughness. They were worried about his mentality. And they're all saying, okay, if you love Luka Šamanić, just draft him at 29. I mean, this is like, you know, the Monday, you know, the quarterbacking that goes after the draft. Who knows if he would have been there? I know that he was very nervous on draft night about where he might end up. You know, there was some, a lot of talk that he's going to drop to the second round. So, you know, getting Keldon Johnson at 29, you could have easily have flipped those two guys. And so,
Interesting. Is that fluid?
Whole draft is honestly really fluid. I mean, Bol Bol went 44 and Justin.
So what's
James.
The deal with Bol Bol? As someone who does, like, are the medicals just like, is he just a broken foot waiting to happen tomorrow? Is he like, there's characters? So like, well, how the hell does Bol Bol go from top five, then he gets injured, to still in the green room, which huge catastrophe of everyone who organized that. Good, well done.
Can I say something real quick?
Yes.
I think we need to go back to like just inviting like 12 to 14.
Why are there 24 dudes there?
I mean, like, you're setting yourself up for like Rashard Lewis part. At least Rashard went in like 30. Was there 30? Maybe like the first pick in the second round, I think. Maybe first or second. But this was like, I mean, talking about feeling. We got to a point, I think, before the Nasir Little pick, I think we had 6 players still left in that green room last night.
Serve them food at least or something. Bring some food out. He's going to be sitting there the whole night. So what's the deal with Bol Bol? Tell me about what happened. I don't understand.
It's a combination of intel, medicals, and then weighing 208 pounds. If you're a center in the NBA, it's hard to be under 210 pounds. And so, you know, a lot of teams told me we had this guy top 20 on our board. We just – it was going to be such a huge endeavor for our staff and we just didn't want to put them through it. Honestly, we just didn't have the patience. I mean, it would have been a daily thing of holding his hand. And so they, once you start sliding in the draft, you know, there's no telling how far you can go. And that's what happened with Bol. But, I mean, I'm happy for him that he ended up in Denver. I think that's a great spot for him. Tim Connelly, you know, told me that, you know, they had him top 10 on their board. And so, to get a guy like that or who you can be patient with and
they had him top 10 on their board yesterday?
Yes. Yeah. A couple of teams told me they had him top 20. So it's not like he was universally red flagged and, you know, people just took him off and said, do not draft. So I honestly don't know what happened. I don't, like, if you're Sacramento, how do you not take a chance on that guy at 40? You take Justin James, who by all accounts, you could get him undrafted. So, where is the value there? I mean, we were talking about this earlier. Teams kill themselves all year to get second-round pick after second-round pick. And then, you know, the draft starts, and all these really good players don't get picked because they don't want to take two-ways. So I don't understand what, you know, why teams fight over these second-rounders so much to go and just let all these guys go undrafted. What happens if you draft Lou Dort 55th. I mean, and so what? He's going to force a tender? I mean, what's so bad about that? At some point, you just got to go get talent in the draft. I mean, that's what it's all about. Most years, you know, our top 80 gets picked almost in, you know, pretty easily. This year, there were 4 or 5 guys who weren't our top 100 that got drafted. And so, you know, I mean, you look back on the second round year after year and anything can happen, but it was a surprising night in that regard. I've been doing this for 16 years, and I really have never seen a night like that.
Wow. Wow. You said something about, oh, Bol Bol, top 10. Look, I believe that he was on the top 10 of Denver's board. I will say my favorite thing about the day after the draft is how every organization anonymously leaks its top tier of, like, we had a line right below here, and, like, just by coincidence, the guy we ended up picking was, like, in our top tier for, like, for sure – Culver, like Minnesota, like clockwork, had a tier, top tier, and Culver was in the top tier, and just, you know, it's every time. Atlanta, so speaking of seconds, Atlanta, I believe, sold 2 second-round picks before the draft and then traded 3 of them to get the 34th pick and draft a guy I damn sure never heard of.
Bruno Fernando.
Which people say is good. So that's 5 second-round picks out the door for the Hawks. So I just want to go back to the Hawks for a second. So the Hawks now have Trae Young, John Collins, DeAndre Hunter, who's going to be a 3/4 in the NBA, or just a 3?
4.
4? Okay, because I was talking to some of his people at the draft hotel yesterday. They were all begging Atlanta to trade up to
get him. He was the only team that they worked out for. I mean, they married this guy, you know, in the middle of May, and you know, nobody had his medicals, and everybody knew that they were going to draft DeAndre Hunter, and they eventually got him.
And Kevin Herter and some other. So they need to figure out, is Collins a 4 or a 5? This move would seem to shove him more towards being a center, which is fine, whatever. I will say, you know, they've, as you said, they've gone out and they've targeted guys that they've wanted, and they paid a lot to get DeAndre Hunter. We're going to see if that works out. But there were just, I mean, the whole NBA is gathered at this hotel for like 3 days in New York, and all I do is lurk around the lobby talking to people. There is the Hawks. There is a lot of curiosity about the Hawks next year and how that team looks. And I mean curiosity not just among people like DeAndre Hunter and his people who want to get drafted there. Curiosity among agents of veterans who are going to be up for free agency in the next 2 or 3 years. Because like Atlanta is a sleeping giant as a market. NBA players like Atlanta. Some NBA players live in Atlanta in the offseason. And everyone kind of took notice of like Trae Young's last 40 games. Trae Young is a great passer. He's the kind of player that a lot of other players would like to play with, I think, if he dials back his shot selection maybe a little bit. Collins is a beast. Like that, if that team, and they played, what, like 400 ball for the last 40 games of the season, like they were a competent bad team, an exciting, competent bad team. I'm just like, they've, like, the jury is not out on the Luka trade. I think Dallas will probably end up, depending on Reddish, obviously, I think Dallas will have taken the best player of those three players, will be Luka. So maybe they win the trade by default. But it could end up being close. And we'll see about Hunter. But, like, there's a lot of excitement in the league about the Hawks.
You know, it's funny. They have 7 players on rookie contracts. So 7 out of the – they'll have a roster of 14. So half their roster will be guys on rookie contracts. The other 4 players are Kent Bazemore, Allen Crabbe, Miles Plumlee, and Solomon Hill, which equate to, I think, $62 million in expiring contracts. And next year, I mean, they've lined – you're right, Zach. They've lined their books up. I mean, they've got $15 million in like guaranteed money here to, you know, to either keep on doing what they're doing. I mean, Trae Young's not up until 2022 for a new contract. Torian Prince, who they traded, was extension eligible. John Collins isn't up until the following year. So there is a lot of intrigue as far as how they've kind of, you know, stacked their rookies up against the cap here. But I think they're going to have to go get some like veterans, right, for that.
Well, they have Dwayne Dedman's bird rights, yep, or whatever version of bird rights they have on Dwayne Dedman, who is sneakily like the most coveted under the radar free agent in the league. Like every team is like, do you think we can get Dwayne Dedman for the mid-level? Like he's the sexiest mid-level name in the whole league.
You know who also is a sneaky name, but he's restricted, is Ken Birch.
Ken Birch is solid.
That's the name I'm hearing, but that restricted, you know, restricted free agency teams get scared. They don't want to put an offer sheet down, but that's another name that I've heard thrown around a little bit here.
So any team that gets Dedman at the actual mid-level, I think will be a win, because there's going to be a big market for him. And by the way, a guy that I'm kind of curious to see what happens to him that they have under contract next year is Alex Len. Alex Len was a nice little buy low play for the Hawks. He started to shoot corner threes last year. Maybe he can venture a little bit above the break. He's physical. He's tough. Like he's exactly what the NBA is evolving away from, which Phoenix probably should have known when they drafted him 4 or 5. I can't remember. But he had an interesting sneaky season last year, and I'm curious to see what he can do. Enough Hawks. Let's talk about the Suns. Someone has to help me put this together. The Suns made 3 trades last night. In order, they dumped TJ Warren, who's going to end up making about the NBA average, and the number 32 pick to Indiana. And you're okay, Suns are trying to clear cap space. makes some sense. Suns got a clear cap space. They need a point guard. They had 14 point guards. Now they have zero or like half of one. Could make sense. Clear some cap space. Then they traded number 6 for number 11 in Dario Saric. Okay. So you can talk me into that. Everyone said, you know.
He's Croatian.
He's Croatian. I like Dario. Very nice guy.
Do you like Philadelphia Dario or Minnesota Dario?
Well, Minnesota Dario is cranky and a little sad and not –
You like paying him in a year? How much are you going
to
get
him? No. We're going to get to all this, okay? We're going to get to all this. You can talk me into Saric is all I'm saying. You can talk – like 6-for-11 in Saric. Like I think Dario's a pretty good player. I actually don't know how big of a market he's going to be. Like, is he a $15 million player in the NBA? Is he a, I don't think he's a $20 million player by any means. He brings some playmaking that the Suns, who are full of chuckers, could actually kind of use from a big man position. Like you could talk me into that. And 6 and 11, like everyone kept telling me, oh, the difference between 6 and 18 is nothing. So you can talk me into that. They added about $1 million of net salary in that trade. So whatever they sent out, dumped in Warren, -1. Then they trade with Boston and they get Baines, who makes 5, and they get 24, and they take Ty Jerome, who's a point guard. And they've now erased 70% of the cap space that they opened up with the TJ Warren trade. So in the aggregate, in number 11, and we'll talk about who they picked at number 11 in a second, Dario Saric, number 24, and Aaron Baines. Out, number 6. Number 32, which the Pacers then turn into 3 seconds, TJ Warren and the Bucks' first round pick in 2020 to the Celtics. So 3 picks above 32, so almost 3 first round picks out, 2 in, and then the players I named. So like I just when you sort of the dust all settles, the Suns with Kelly Oubre's cap hold, and like Kelly Oubre is a decent young player, the Suns should want to keep Kelly Oubre, have I think 14 to 15 million in room. Not enough for D'Angelo Russell, who they have openly coveted. Not enough for anyone. Not enough for Malcolm Brogdon. Like maybe enough for Patrick Beverley. Not enough for a max free agent. What in the hell just happened? Can someone tell? Like what are they doing? What happened?
Well, and when they did, when the trade was announced, and I think that was the first one, right? It was like 5:30 on Thursday. That I had thought that Indiana was sending pick 18. They had 18 or 17. As part of that deal to take back the TJ Warren contract, but and they got 32. Indiana got back 32 in cash, and when we wrote about it, that was one of my first round winners was the Pacers because of that contract they took back, and they took I think Indiana took 32 and turned it into 3 seconds.
3 seconds. Miami took the kid from Stanford in there. I don't know.
Okpala.
Yeah. I like his name. KZ, right? I'm in on that guy. That's all it takes for me to be in on a college guy I've never seen before. He's a good name. I'm in.
But yeah, so we all thought that was all cap, right? Cap clearing. Here we go. D'Angelo Russell, point guard. You still had that Milwaukee pick. You can move, Tyler Johnson maybe. You can try to find a home for him down the road, maybe open up more. And then they move, they go from 6 to 11. They take Saric. Jonathan can talk about Cam Johnson. And then the Boston trade. I like Ty Jerome. I do. You got to give up the Milwaukee pick.
Why is Baines in that trade?
That is probably going to be the million-dollar question. I know that when he opted into his contract about a week ago, that the goal for him was to try to find another team. That Danny would maybe move him on to another team, or maybe he has a bigger role. But he would have had a bigger role in Boston, right? If Al Horford's not going to be there. But yeah, I mean, you put Baines in that deal. So it was Baines and 24, right? For Ty Jerome, which is it's a pretty good, and the Milwaukee pick. It's a pretty good.
Yeah, Boston did all right there. Yeah. Everyone's killing Boston. I don't feel strongly either way about what Boston did last night. I just don't see what the grand plan. The intel was they just wanted to dump TJ Warren. They just don't like TJ Warren. There's something about him. They don't want him on their team. He doesn't make a lot of money by current NBA standards. He shot 40-something% from three after doing nothing from beyond the arc in his first couple seasons. So if that's real, he's an interesting, you know, in his first couple of seasons, he hasn't played a lot of defense. He does not pass to anyone. Like, he just never passes. But if he can shoot threes and he's willing to keep shooting threes at that volume and sort of exchange a lot of his little mid-range floater teardrop things, which he's good at, and try on defense, he becomes an interesting guy who can play the three or the four. Just like if you bring back Bogdanovich, he can play the three or the four. And Indiana's going to have some decisions to make about the four, which we could talk about. Like, T.J. Warren is not a toxic asset. Like, you shouldn't have to attach number 32, which is almost a first-round pick, to dump T.J. Warren. Like, that's not how the NBA works, unless you have a grand plan of what you're going to do with all this cap space, which I just assumed was the case. And now I just don't – I don't know. And then they pick Cam Johnson. Please tell me what this person is. And you had him mocked at 30, I think, and some people had him mocked below that.
I actually had Cam 19th on my top 100. So I Cam Johnson as a player. 6'9", 45% three-point shooter.
I thought you were going to say 45 years old for a second.
Oldest lottery pick in the last decade, according to Kevin Pelton. The last one was Tyler Hansbrough. So I have a problem with the value here, because quite a few teams told me on draft day, she had him at 21 from the lottery until the day of the draft. And, you know, what I'm trying to do is make sure that I have players in the general range of where they're going to get picked. And a lot of people told me, we've got Cam Johnson medically red flagged. This guy might not go in the first round. You better drop him. And so I drop him to 30th, and then they draft him 11th. So I don't have the problem with Cam Johnson, the player. I think he's good. I just think they could have traded down 10, 15 spots and still gotten him, you know, just to go from, you have the second worst record in the NBA. You win 19 games last year and then you fall to sixth. And then after all that misery of last year, you end up with Cam Johnson. I mean, that's all you end up with. That's disappointing when you consider New Orleans finished, I don't know, with the eighth worst record and they get Zion Williamson. It just shows you how unfair the NBA is with, you know, this lottery reform. It's painful if you're a Suns fan.
Maybe they have some. I'm willing to give them like a very slight benefit of the doubt, even though they had a goat in their GM's office a couple years ago. Like, I'm willing to give them like maybe that there's a larger plan here. But with $15 million or $24 million, if they renounce Oubre, that's still not enough to get you to D'Angelo Russell's max number, but it gets you close. You're like one transaction away. You know, we'll see what they do. But this is like, you know, you ask yourself, like, why is Tyler Johnson on this team? Like, well, what is he doing here? It's like Brandon Knight, which it turned out to be a huge mistake, becomes Ryan Anderson, becomes Tyler Johnson. And then, like, this is one of those things, like, when they extended Booker at 12:01 a.m. with a max, I think, right?
Yeah, first guy off the board.
I didn't mind. Like, I get why teams do that. You particularly a team like the Suns, who's trying to prove to the larger NBA, we take care of our players. We're a competent organization. You should want your players to come to us. Like, you got to take care of your guys. And so you applaud that and say, you know, maybe Devin Booker, he's going to have to grow into that role. I'm a Booker optimist. I've said that many times on this podcast. I'm higher on him than a lot of people. So it's fine. There is a price for that. And the price for that is he would have been a $10 million cap hold right now instead of a $27 or $28 million player. And like, that's your cap space. That's your TJ Warren dump. That's all of that. So, you know, I didn't mind it at the time. I still don't mind it now, but you just shouldn't have to dump TJ Warren. We'll see.
Couldn't they have gotten off Josh Jackson? I mean, I kept hearing the last couple of days, like, they're giving away Josh Jackson for a bag of potato chips. Does anybody want this guy? So, with all those trades that they made, I mean, couldn't they have, you know, moved down a little bit and gotten off him, opened up some more cap room?
Is the intel on Josh Jackson, I mean, look, there's been some stuff in the news recently on the gossip websites that I do not frequent but sometimes appear on my Twitter feed that is not great about Josh Jackson. Is the intel on him that bad? That, like, he was the fourth pick in the draft yesterday, basically. And, you know, look, I haven't liked his game in the NBA. He can't shoot. He's incredibly wild. Every time he throws up a floater, I think it's going to smash the backboard into pieces. But he's got some tools, and he's got some feel as a passer when he directs his game that way. Like, he's got enough stuff that if his off-court life is somewhat in order, I could see a team being like, you know what, let's just get him in here, get him into our culture and see what we can make him, because he's not hopeless, I don't think. They're just trying to give him away.
That's what it sounds like. I mean, teams are just hoarding cap space so closely that's a pretty big number, I guess, and everybody wants to keep their cap clean, and so I could see him getting moved later on in the summer once teams strike out on some free agents.
It'll be interesting if they even pick up his option.
Wow.
8-9 for next year, for 2020-21, for his fourth year.
So this is the team that just did not pick up Dragan Bender's option, not pick up Marquise Chris's option. That's not great. Let's talk about the Nets and D'Angelo Russell since we're here. Phoenix right now does not have room for D'Angelo Russell, although you can do sign and trades. There's all sorts of things. Dallas has all this cap space, about 30, right? We'll see who they target with it. The Knicks are a big fat TBD right now. Indiana needs a point guard. All the intel is Rubio. I think that is the leading candidate, but they have other options there that they're going to look at. The Lakers, we just had the whole discussion about, I can't figure out how much cap space they have and what they're going to do with it. If Kemba Walker leaves, Charlotte needs a point guard. Don't have a lot of cap flexibility to get one. Interesting debate about Boston. If Kyrie leaves, which we're going to talk about now, and they bring back Rozier, do they need to spend any cap room on a point guard, or should they spend their cap room in other places? Should they just roll with Rozier and Marcus Smart and maybe Brad Wanamaker and leave it there? That's an interesting one. Orlando has DJ Augustine going into in his last year of his contract, and Markel Fultz, who, sure, I don't know. Detroit would love to have Reggie Jackson be gone, I think, and he will be after next season, but they don't have any space to do anything. The Wizards have John Wall and Satoransky heading into free agency. Minnesota's up to something. Minnesota is up to something. They made that trade last night, which everyone seemed to like. This Culver kid will fit well with them. They have all these wings now. Obviously, they'd love to get off Wiggins. There's been a lot of Minnesota D'Angelo Russell noise, and it's not all Carl Towns commenting on Instagram because they're friends. Minnesota has communicated to the league, not the NBA league, just the league at large, that they believe they have a pathway to get D'Angelo Russell. I can't see what it is because they're capped out and they have all these contracts nobody wants, but they've communicated that, so TBD. Then the New York Post drops this story 2 days ago about how the Nets are beginning to agonize on Kyrie, that the Nets are having an internal debate about what have we gotten ourselves into here? And I believe that story is accurate. And Woj has said on TV already many times, the Nets have contemplated, would we bring Kyrie here in a vacuum? And I've always said that's not the plan. That obviously wasn't the plan. The Allen Crabbe trade telegraphed that the plan was Kyrie plus someone better than Kyrie who's coming because Kyrie is coming. And that someone better tore his Achilles during the finals and has thrown – and the ripple effects of that are rippling all over the league. The Nets made another trade last night. They traded 27 to the Clippers for some stuff.
They got the Philly first,
which is actually a really interesting trade. We should talk about it. It's an interesting trade from both perspectives. But the net result for the Nets, no pun intended, is that they cleared another $1.8 million in cap space. They are now very close to the two max slots, the 30% for Kyrie and the 35% for, let's call him KD. Just throw some letters out there. Just call him KD. They are now close enough that they can make that happen without trading Torian Prince. They might have to trade Musa or somebody like that. It appears that's going to be the plan here. What does that mean for Russell? Do we know? What can we say about the Nets?
We can say is, and I don't want to hurt scare Nets fans, but I would be concerned about Kyrie Irving as a solo act. And I've seen that solo act before, and his name was Deron Williams. And I don't want to compare the two as far as, style, both, different styles there, but as far as on the court, off the court, a little moody here, is he a good teammate? All those questions there. And I think we all know how that worked out for all of us
You're currently on this podcast.
I am. I'm talking to you. I wouldn't say that Kyrie will be sitting in the Sean Marks' office on the couch, you know, when we're doing free agent stuff like Darren did and, pondering what guys we should go out and sign. But, I would say I think that article is accurate. I would, it's a debate like, well, who would you rather have, D'Angelo Russell or Kyrie Irving?
Well, Woj has already said it. Like, that article wasn't the first place to say it. I think it was the first place in print to say it. But Woj just said, on TV that so not to spoil a column I might write, but you just asked the question. And if you poll league executives, and I've probably polled 24 by now, with this question, in a vacuum, no Kevin Durant, no star number two, whoever that is Kyrie Irving, just make up the number, whatever it ends up being, $8 million better than D'Angelo Russell in a vacuum. I would say of the people I've polled, 2/3 say yes, 1/3 say no, especially not with what he's going to bring off the floor or to your locker room or whatever it is, or what has happened in his previous stops. All that said, I still think if Kyrie wants to come to Brooklyn, the Nets will make that happen. But that's an interesting question, and if you boil down – whatever discussion is going on in Brooklyn, reportedly, that's what it is. Is if the second guy is either not Durant or the Achilles has thrown the whole thing into question, because you just can't assume Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant ever again. Like, that's not how Achilles injuries works. I hope he is. I hope that turns out to be the case. And if the second star is just name one of the
– what happens if the second – and he's not a star, but he's probably going to get a max. What happens if the second guy is Tobias Harris?
This is what I'm saying. If the second guy, just name a guy who's not one of the five best free agents. So that's not Kyrie in a vacuum. That's Kyrie plus someone that wasn't really our plan A or plan B. Is Kyrie that much better than D'Angelo Russell? And is that other guy that good that it being whatever baggage comes along with it is worth it? That's a question that will get you a lot of different answers around the NBA.
Well, and I mean, you watched them all last year. We all did. I mean, that was a position of strength, right? Guard play with Russell, Dinwiddie, LeVert, Joe Harris. The playoffs kind of exposed that you need that second score, probably more of a big stretch, stretch four. It's like with D'Angelo, it's like, I think I wrote about it. It's like the analytics versus the eye test. Like, the analytics are not like a D'Angelo – they are a D'Angelo Russell fan. But if you watch him, yeah, there's still some things about him. But, I think a lot of it had to do with how that Brooklyn team – basically he had to kind of put that team on his shoulder, especially when Dinwiddie was out with that injury. And if you're asking me who would I rather take, I'd rather take D'Angelo Russell. And if you had asked me that when the start of the season, I would have said you're crazy. I would have said Kyrie Irving, but the more I watch, I'd rather have $6 million less of D'Angelo Russell and a player that's been in that system for 2 years already and is not going to probably rock the
boat. It is a really interesting question, because the answer should obviously be Kyrie Irving. And for some people in the league, it is obvious. And for other people, it's not obvious. And for other people, it's the other answer that you just gave. I don't want to belabor this point because I might write about it, but I do think – athletically, they are at a different level, and they're D'Angelo Russell. The question that everyone has to ask themselves, and the question that the Nets are asking themselves, is: did he get better last year, or did he just make a lot of floaters that he missed in previous years? And by making those, was that just sort of the random blip of stuff that happens in a year, or is it real?
You know what, too, Zach, real quick? The thinking in front offices sometimes is that the players that are out there, either free agent and trade targets, like, you value those guys more than sometimes your own players. Like, you think that guy, that Kyrie Irving out there, maybe D'Angelo Russell left a bad taste from the Philly series, right?
He was not good in the playoffs. Now, and It's a fascinating alternative history of the Nets last season is, what if LeVert never gets hurt? Because LeVert was the best player on the team. He was the all-star buzz was about LeVert. It was his team. Then it became D'Angelo's team. And the net effect of that is teams started game planning for him. After about 20 games, okay, this guy's going to have the ball all the time. I think he ran the third most pick and rolls in the entire league. This is his team. Teams start game planning for him, and he did pretty well. In the playoffs, game planning for him meant, here's Ben Simmons. Deal with this. And it did not work out very well.
Well, you're right. I mean, that's – I mean, we saw after game one, right? He had that great second half in game one, and then, I mean, he struggled mightily, and I think – that's where probably the Kyrie Irving debate comes in, where here's a guy that's, you know, can take over a game, but is it by himself now?
Jonathan, tell me a little bit more about what you think of Chicago getting White at, what do they pick, 7? Because with White and Chris Dunn there, now Chris Dunn may not be long for there, but we'll see. Another theoretical point guard free agent landing spot has perhaps been vaporized. I mean, there was a ton of Malcolm Brogdon Chicago noise. We'll see about that now. That may be off the table, though Brogdon is good enough to play the two. But then they have Zach LaVine, who they doth protest too much about that they would never trade Zach LaVine. How dare anyone suggest we trade Zach LaVine? How dare anyone suggest we trade Chris Dunn? Chicago is the king of how dare you? How dare you? All of these players are part of our core. No, they're not going to be. We'll see. They can't all possibly be. How does he fit with what they have going on? Because I love Markkanen, I love Carter, and Porter, I think, I like them going to get Otto Porter, a good player in the prime of his career. There's nothing wrong with getting that player, even if he's making $27 million a year. How does White fit?
I think the appeal of Coby White, the reason why he, you know, rose up draft boards this year, is because he can theoretically play both guard spots. He's 6'5".
I didn't realize he was that big until I started looking into him last night.
The problem is that he has a 6'5 wingspan. He has an 8'1 standing reach. So he really has the size and the length of a 6'1 player. Right. So he's effectively a one position player, but he can really shoot, especially with his feet set. And so you can definitely play him, you know, with another guard. And, you know, I still am hearing that they're going to be going after, you know, a veteran guard in free agency. Maybe Beverly, you know, who's going to have a pretty good market, it looks like here.
Patrick Beverly looks like he's going to win free agency compared to what you would have expected 2 seasons ago.
Zach, I thought he was a mid-level guy, like a $9 million guy. I think he's going to get like $14, $15 million.
So I'm not sold on Coby White. A lot of people are. And the NBA loves Coby White, and so does, you know, Schmitz, and all the draft people are huge Coby White fans. I'm a little skeptical about, because I feel like he was the player that was in the best position of any guy in the draft in terms of his situation, surrounded by shooting, surrounded by older guys. Roy Williams gave him the keys to the team. He had the ultimate green light. He, you know, was not a very efficient player by any means. In terms of creating, finishing in the lane, I'm questioning his defense too. So I'm not a Coby White guy. I mean, that's why I really thought Minnesota did well to get Jarrett Culver at 6. I think there's a big gap between those two. So I'm curious to see how things turn out. It looks like, you know, if the Bulls don't get a guard, they're going to put the ball in Coby White's hands and let him loose, and that'll be good for his development. But I wonder if we look back on this pick, you know, 3 to 5 years from now and say, you know, Coby White's a nice backup. He's a Jordan Clarkson type. He's a Patty Mills type, something like that. I'm not sure that in a normal year he's the 7th pick in the draft.
Interesting. Speaking of Minnesota and Culver, I liked that they kept Covington. I liked what Minnesota did last night. I liked that they kept Covington.
It really sounded like they thought they had the number 4 pick, and it was a little bit surprising that. That didn't materialize, because all the talk, you know, 2 hours before the draft was Minnesota is going to be drafting 4th, and what are they going to do with that pick? You know, do they keep flipping it? Do they keep moving down? And so it was interesting to see, you know, Atlanta kind of swoop ahead of them, and that's why people say, oh, Atlanta gave up too much to move up. They had to. They had no choice, and that's what
they're. And they didn't give up 10. That was the sticking point for so long between Atlanta and New Orleans, and Atlanta and Cleveland at 5 had a ton of talks, and those teams were like, you got to give us 8 and 10. And Atlanta was like, we're not giving you 8 and 10. We'll give you 8 and 17. And, like, turned out they had to take Solomon Hill, and some other stuff had to happen, but they kept 10. At least they kept 10.
Yeah, I don't think they paid that heavy of a price. I mean, they're not going to be players in free agency, so for me – Solomon Hill, Who cares? Honestly, yeah.
They were a team that was going to take back contracts anyway, right? They were a team you saw when the Allen Crabbe. That's been the trend the last 2 years is take back money and draft picks. And now, like, if you think that your guy is in that like 4 to 7 range, right in there, then go up and get him.
Exactly.
Don't wait to eight.
So I just think people are skeptical of DeAndre Hunter, and that's where they wonder, you know, did they have to move up? You know, where would he have been actually picked had they just stood pat at 8? Maybe he would have been there. Maybe they didn't have to give up 17. And so it'll be interesting to see where DeAndre, you know, what kind of player DeAndre Hunter turns into, because there's, you know, very differing opinions on how good he is. You know, he's an older player, not the most athletic guy, can't really create his own shot. Shot threes on a very low volume last year. And the analytics tell you he's not a great defender, but the eye test tells you something totally different. And they were, you know, what he did in the national championship game, scoring 27 points. So I like DeAndre Hunter, but, you know, it just shows you how wide open this draft was that some people didn't have him top 10 on their board. And Atlanta felt so strongly about needing to get him that they traded up to 4 to get him.
I said this exact same thing a year ago. You can say what you want about Travis Schlenk. You can hate all the trades he's made, say I disagree with all of it, just a fool for passing on Luka, whatever you want to say. So many GMs get their first job or their second job or their third job, and their number one priority is keeping their job. Travis Schlenk has the guts to be like, I like that player more than that player. I don't care what the public opinion is. I don't care if I'm going to get a D from Kevin Pelton for giving all this stuff to go up again for.
I care that I got a D from Kevin
there
Pelton.
There you go. Like, I'm going to make my team the way I want. Now, the owners have a ton of influence there. The owners and their offspring have a ton of influence there. So there's that. That's it's hard to untangle who believes what. But at the end of the day, I really do believe these are Travis's calls, and you got to give him credit. He's not risk averse. He's not trying to keep his job. He's trying to build the team that he wants. And the other thing I'll say about Trae Young, I am very interested to see how Trae Young plays. It might be 2 or 3 years before we see this, but in games that really matter, because right now he's just in. I'm going to be Trae Young. I'm going to take a lot of threes, especially toward the end of last year. I'm going to throw great passes. I'm going to be all offense, and on defense, I'm going to be a non-entity. I'm going to be a little piece of tissue paper getting flown around the floor doing nothing. And like, when the games matter, that's not going to fly. Like, when the games matter, he's going to have to at least be a presence. When the games matter, it's not a carnival. It's a high intense environment. And I know that the Hawks are, they're not concerned about that, but I know that the Hawks are already trying to show their players, okay, we're playing one type of game right now. Here's the game. Here's what the game's going to look like in 5 years. So I was in Philly for some playoff game against the Raptors. I go down to my hotel lobby and to get a coffee or something. And who's in the lobby but Lloyd Pierce? Oh, what the hell is Lloyd Pierce doing here? I know he coached with Philly several years. Maybe he's just visiting. Man, he's having coffee with some redhead. Oh, it's Kevin Huerter. And so Lloyd Pierce did the thing that Brett Brown did where he took all his young players and said, you know what? We're sitting courtside at an elimination game in the conference finals because I want you to see what this looks like. I went up and talked to them. That's what they were there to do. And so, like, I'm interested to see what Trae Young looks like in real games, real competitive games. Brogdon, going back to Chicago, one of the big questions of the offseason to me is, where is Malcolm Brogdon going to be? Because the Bucks are starting to brace themselves for a $20 million offer sheet. And I don't know what the walkaway number for Milwaukee is, but they have it. And when they started to get under the cap, as Bobby has been documenting on Twitter and in his pieces for a while now, to get under the cap to re-sign Lopez, to take advantage of Chris Middleton's relatively small cap hold and Brogdon's teensy cap hold, I just said, you know, I bet they're going to bring back Brogdon and Middleton and Lopez. Mirotić goes away, and they're going to either be right below the tax or a little bit over it. And I think the question is going to become, are we willing to pay the tax for Malcolm Brogdon? And I don't know what the answer is, but Chicago may have taken one place off the board. But I know the Bucks are bracing for a huge Malcolm Brogdon offer sheet. And look, you can tell me they have Bledsoe already. How essential is Brogdon? How replaceable is he? Malcolm Brogdon, when it mattered, was the second best player on their team. when it mattered against Toronto and Eric Bledsoe couldn't shoot and couldn't be on the floor, Malcolm Brogdon was the second most important player on their team. And they also have to ask themselves, so is this going to happen to Eric Bledsoe every playoffs? Is this going to be a thing where he can't shoot and the Brogdon thing is now one of the more interesting questions of the offseason to me.
And you know what, too, Zach? Like, so they did the deal with Detroit. They flipped Tony Snell for John Lohr. I mean, they saved.
Which a lot of people thought they couldn't do. I mean, there was people were saying Tony Snell is contract. There's no way the 30th pick gets you off of that. And now they still have Ilya Sova who they can get off of, and that's not going to be that difficult. It's $20 million.
No, I don't think they want to get off Ilya Sova. They may have to.
If they need to, yeah, they can still make that move.
But they saved about $4 million, I think, for this season, for 1920, and they gave themselves a little bit of a buffer. But, like, you run the numbers, right? Like, we were talking about it. And, like, so you can get to $13 million in room with waiving George Hill and then renouncing all, you know, your Mirotić and that group there. And you can bring Lopez back at, like, $12 to $13 million. And then with Middleton and Brogdon at 20, you're going to be in a luxury tax. I mean, you're going to be like I think 8 million would say.
No, like, and you can say, oh, the luxury tax, that's bad. Like, Giannis's mega deal is coming up in a couple of years. We got to prepare for that. You got to avoid the repeater taxes and the other thing. But, like, this is when you pay the tax.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, other things, like, Malcolm Brogdon's cap hold is $3 million, right? So if Malcolm Brogdon goes, like, you're not going to be able to, like, replace it. Not like it's like a guy's got a $30 million cap hold, and you're like, you know what, let him go. And then that you all of a sudden get that money. He's got a $3 million cap hold. It's to your advantage. And I think the philosophy for restricted free agents is, and some teams get burned. We saw it in Portland, right, with Myers with Alan Crabb when they matched that offer sheet, and then they paid Myers Leonard just the ability to keep him, maybe use him as an asset down the road. That the trend is usually you'd keep that guy. You match it, and then you kind of, you know, worry about it down the road. Malcolm Brogdon will be – unless he breaks down and gets hurt, if there's a injury.
Which, by the way, the flag is red, right? I mean, like –
that's why he dropped in the draft.
People are worried about his foot, and so we'll see what that does to his value.
Right. And, I mean, you could always protect it. You know, you can put some injury protection language in there possibly. With his agent, you know, David Falk, that's his agency there, which is, you know, that might be a hard thing to pass.
The Joel Embiid extension is a document that a lot of teams look to as, you know, when they have a player that they believe or are chasing a player that they believe has a very specific injury risk.
Yeah. And so that he's going to be an interesting guy. Like, if it's 4 years, $80 million, like, then you have a decision to make, right? I mean, then who's your – and then what are you relying on? You're relying on Pat Connaughton.
Solid.
Right?
Yeah. By the way, I do like Malcolm Brogdon was maybe their second best player for some high-stakes minutes in the playoffs. George Hill was their third best player for some of those high-stakes
minutes. Yeah, and the thing with Hill is that his guarantee date is – I think it's June 30th. So it's not like you're going to get – like you have George Hill until like July 8th and you figure out, you know what, we're going to lose Brogdon and we can bring back George Hill. It's like, unless George Hill amends his contract and pushes the date back, which usually doesn't happen, but you can lose, you know, you could lose Hill, you could lose Brogdon. That's why sometimes you just got to, you know, just do it. Just match it and then worry about the luxury tax later.
Rapid fire before I let you guys go. Gavone, I'll start with you. Any team we haven't talked about that you wanted to hit that you felt was interesting last night?
Portland getting Nasir Little at 25, big fan of that move. I don't really understand how he dropped that far, but with Amino entering free agency and Harkless having a year left on, I mean, that he's going to be able to play real minutes and actually help them and for a really small number. So I'm a fan of that pick at 25.
Tyler Hero to Miami, and not because I helped prep him for his draft interviews during this process.
Really?
I did. I prepped a bunch of these guys as a I enjoy doing it, and you know, and he was one of my guys that I got to prep. So I got to know him a little bit, so I know what type of guy personality he's getting to Miami. Hard nose, right? Plays with an edge.
Is he ready for the pads practice and all that stuff?
I think he is. He's got an edge to him, right? I mean, here's a kid who was committed to Wisconsin, decommitted to go to Kentucky, and basically got like death threats. I think he told me, like, he came out one morning, like, someone had egged his house. Like, this was like a 17-year-old kid in in high school.
Are college sports fanatics the most fanatic of all fanatics in sports? I mean, just like it's that's crazy. What you're describing is institutionalizing behavior.
You know what's too crazy? And I'm sorry, I'm running rampant on this, but I asked him when I was prepping him. I said, "What happens if Milwaukee drafted you at 30?" And I said, "Yeah, you're not going to get the 30, right?" Like I just said, "Like what happens if the Bucks?" And he like looked at me like, "Yeah, I guess I'd go." You know, like it wasn't like he's like, "I got to get out of Wisconsin." You know, I've lived there all my life, but you know, the whole going there, you know, really turned a lot of people off. But I think there and Casey Okpala, is that how we say it? You know, those two players for a team that had, you know, financial restrictions, but based on that roster.
What about the Grizzlies? I think they deserve some props. You know, they locked into Ja Morant. That's one thing, but then they go and make an aggressive move to go get Brandon Clark, you know, only cost them a 2024 second rounder. They signed my favorite undrafted free agent, John Conchar, immediately after the draft to a two-way contract. So,
and I thought they did really well in the Conley trade.
Absolutely, yeah. So shades of competence from the Memphis Grizzlies, and they're going to be a league pass favorite. I mean, is there a more athletic team in the NBA with Jaren Jackson, Brandon Clark, Ja Morant? That's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Well, and look, you can do a lot worse. Not that's even downplaying it. If you're in a full rebuild, which they now are, you get to start with Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, look, I'll learn more about Morant as he plays, but all of the reports are amazing. He's the number two pick in the draft. And Jaren Jackson Jr., I voted him third rookie of the year, even though he missed 25, 30 games. I thought he was awesome. I would have voted him second rookie of the year had he been healthy all season. I put him first team all rookie, all of that. I thought he was fantastic. He can play four or five. You can build your team however you want around him. I think they got decisions to make with Valanciunas. I would worry about getting a little too excited about all the scoring numbers he put up in Memphis and giving him a number that's a little scary. But
Now that you get Brandon Clark, I think that maybe eases, you know, this guy is turning 23 in September. He's a little bit like Jaren Jackson. He, you know, probably the best athlete in the draft after Zion or Ja, best shot blocker in college basketball, can switch on everything, lob catcher, shot 70% from the field, and I think he's going to end up being a good shooter as well. So Brandon Clark, to get that guy at 21, I think is a huge steal.
I'm interested in Indiana, who had the Goga guy fall to them, another center. I thought they did well, as we talked about, to get Warren. Then they traded the pick they got for Warren for 3 seconds. And they have Sabonis and Turner, and the whole league is watching and wondering, you really going to do that? You really going to play both those guys together? How long is that going to last? What's it going to cost us to get Sabonis? What's it going to cost us to get Turner? They drafted another center. Now, I don't know how far he is away. I mean, you can tell me. But the plan right now, and Warren kind of slid down to becoming a four in Phoenix, right? The plan right now is, I think the Pacers are going to give it a shot and start Sabonis and Turner together, play Sabonis as essentially your four defensively, which is what he was last year when they played together, and see how that goes, which means Thad Young is out the door. And Thad Young can help a lot of teams, including Utah, who has a big hole at the four, maybe not the shooter that they want, but certainly the kind of defender that they're going to need on their team. Indiana's got, and they obviously have a big hole at point guard. They've got Bogdanović going into free agency. They have a walkaway number for Bogdanović. I don't know what it is, but he's going to get a lot of money, and he's a good player. Responded well to Oladipo's injury and being elevated into that. The Indiana's got a lot of balls in play. Now, tell me about Goga.
Goga is ready. I mean, this is a guy that averaged 12 and 6 in 24 minutes in the EuroLeague. You know, big body, 7 feet tall, 250 pounds. There's a lot of polish there, and so he's ready to come and play 15, 20 minutes a game for you, I think. And it just shows you how down I think the league is on centers right now, that he drops to 18. You know, he was the second center drafted. I mean, that 10, 15 years ago, that never happens. And so I think Goga is I'm also curious to see how does he fit in, but if you're playing two bigs at the same time, then you need a third one who's competent.
Yeah, he's got minutes.
Right? And Goga can shoot, and so that's going to help him play with Sabonis.
And they have to decide, is TJ Leaf going to be part of our team? Is he going to be part of the rotation? How big of a deal is he going to be? Indiana's got some interesting decisions to make, and obviously they have to see when and how Oladipo comes back. But people kind of forgot about them after he got hurt and they got swept in the first round, but they had an interesting night last night. All right, well, we have 9 days until free agency starts, which means we probably have about 90 minutes before there's significant breaking news. Bobby Marks, you got to go spend some time with your family. Jonathan Givony, you live here, so I don't know what you got to go do, but you got to go do something. You guys are both very busy. We're all sleep deprived today. Thank you very much for taking any time out to join us, and we'll have to do it again next year.
This was fun.
Thanks, Zach.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.